You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. T-shirts, get your t-shirts right here. About to be fresh off the press, your OneOfUs.net t-shirts, you can only get them right here. And please do, because for a limited time, OneOfUs.net, our new black and white t-shirts are on sale for really cheap if you pre-order them on the site. Please go ahead and pick yourself up a OneOfUs.net t-shirt, help out the site, help out yourself, and look great doing it.
Yeah, you know, one thing that occurred to me is, and I forget about this every year until it happens, and we're during the short time when the fireflies are out. So, anyway, yeah.
One of those got in my apartment last night.
Firefly?
So it was just like hanging out, like, hey, like the lights were
on. One came into our house the other night, and Janet was like, is that a firefly in the house? I was like, yep, sure is.
And they're bad at hiding.
Correct. You were right.
They can come inside? Yeah, I'm pretty sure they.
Yeah, we don't have
no rules for fireflies.
Well, I just thought they enjoyed the dark. You know, like most flying insects are like a lot of flying
that produce their own light.
I just always thought that how weird would it be if you were a firefly, though, like the one firefly that really wanted to keep it on the DL, and then your ass kept going off. Like,
damn, just... it's hard to be a firefly.
Come on, Danny.
That one guy's like, turn
on,
your ass
together.
Off. Yeah, that's like the worst. Like Far Side. You were like, I just imagine you when you were like 12 years old, like riding to Gary Larson. And like, hey, check out my idea for a new Far Side comic strip.
The Firefly heist.
Good. And really the best thing you can do with comedy is just to stomp all over the premise as soon as one conjures one.
I didn't think I was stomping all over it. I was actually adding
I'm gonna go draw
to
a little,
its future.
Little chubby kids with crew cuts. We can talk about that for the rest of the show.
I don't know what that's all about, but I'm just happy to see the chalice is back.
Oh, yeah, the chalice is back. There are actually multiple chalices tonight.
Chalice?
I'm not exactly. We'll have to consult Guinness Pints to figure out how that works. But anyway, yeah, I have my chalice. I've granted Mark a chalice. And, yeah, and we're, you know,
so
we're back
more,
at it.
Basically what you're saying is Ryan and I are second tier.
Well, just
well, you're
other.
Drinking, like,
you're just other.
White wine, and I'm drinking nice bourbon.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
so
we don't have we have no chalice is what
that
I'm saying.
True.
He granted Mark. He said I granted Mark one.
He grants the
well,
chalice.
Yeah.
Let's get the
we've got lots to cover.
Theme music
let's play theme music. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.
Say inebriated.
Verklempt?
What are you... Oh, in comparison to last week? There is no comparison to me tonight from you from last week.
It's a little hazy from last week.
Yeah, it's not going to be that hazy tonight. I started recording tonight having had a few drinks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not like 100 drinks like you had last week.
100 drinks.
It 90.
Was, it
okay.
was more than two.
Right. Ryan had a little bit of pre-show high-fiving going on before. Yes, you were. Yeah, you were.
You were pre-gaming. Like, pre-gaming, like, with a,
Well, all's well that ends well, and, you know, I'm in better shape this week.
That's good.
Shane is here in my stead this week, representing the Inebriation Club.
Whatever.
I think you're just as good as me this week, my friend.
I don't know about that.
Okay. So... We got to get, I mean, we have to talk about the thing.
Well, yeah, it's a thing, and like, I believe we're the first to bring it up.
Yes, exactly. Breaking news, everybody.
Somebody likes it,
I was getting into an elevator last night.
Actually, I was actually on a phone call that I couldn't get off of when a little thing popped up on my computer screen and said, Prince is dead.
Well, you know how I found out? Mark sent us a text message that said, which one of you assholes brought up Prince on the show?
Yeah.
Well, you know why he said that. And so longtime listeners will know this. We just can't get away from
2016.
Killing people by mentioning how people die. Like 2016 has just been a nonstop litany of.
It's all our fault.
Yes, clearly.
Of course it is all our fault. It's this. It's analogous to like somebody saying.
No,
like,
we should just call this first segment Celebrity Death Watch. Because it's just
or celebrity death cause.
At the very least, it seems like a lot of celebrities and certainly a lot of like talents that have left a lasting impression have taken the dirt nap here in the
moral coil.
Yes, yeah. here in the first, you know.
You're so gentle about the way that you lay that out.
I mean, like, it's not like A, they're not here, and B, they can't hear me.
Well, but you don't want to say,
and we can't really do anything about it.
No,
either.
It's done.
Yeah, but you don't want to say the dirt nap.
I mean, I'm not just, saying I'm not
you
saying,
can get whacked.
This isn't a mob hit, as far as I know. But anyway, yeah.
I thought you said a Bob hit.
Yeah. So anyway,
like some guy named Bob like came over and like punched him in the face, and he's like hit the ground.
I don't know. So anyway, yeah. So Prince is no longer with us. I do think that someone mentioned him in the context of when we were talking about a lot of celebrities that pass on. So anyway, whoever else you're thinking about talking about, maybe we just should not talk about him. And you know, not for.
Was that the first time you said the word Prince? Because I.
It may be like
we were talking about it.
The
purple one.
And by the way, how many times did I see the sort of pun Purple Rain REIGN this week?
Good Lord.
Oh yeah, I saw it twice. Yeah.
And I'm actually really grateful that we didn't choose to do an entire show on that guy's catalog. The very, very short version of my relationship to his music was that when I was
a freshman in high school or something, right?
Something like that, and the girl that lived a couple of doors down drove, and I didn't drive. And so, anyway, I would catch a ride with two girls that lived down the street from me to school every day when that record came out, and they listened to it every day, the entire time that we were in the car going.
Purple Rain specifically.
Holy shit! 5 days a week,
I
hate that record. Like I hate that record with a white hot, fiery passion.
I don't get Prince at all.
And I'm kind of with you there too. But it's like, and it's not like It's not like I don't recognize that. Like the achievement, like clearly it's an achievement.
From like
but it's just like
1978 to about 1987. I think that dude did no wrong. I don't care much for the rest of his catalog.
But that comes down to a matter of taste. I mean, it's easy for me to see a lot of songs in his canon that are brilliant, but they're not brilliant songs that I personally want to listen to. And it feels like I've fought this like my whole life. Like I'm like. Pulled my sword out and like fighting my way through people, you know, not, you know, in real life, like on Facebook or something. I don't actually have a machete or a sword or a long sword or something. But I mean, he's one of those, or had been, you know, God bless him. He was obviously clearly a genius. But for me, if you tell anyone, it's sort of like we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, Ryan. If you tell anybody that you're hanging out with that's a weed smoker that you don't like weed, they're like,
they look at you
like it's like
what?
Springs going out of their head, like in a Warner Brothers cartoon. They can't figure it out. Yeah. When you tell somebody you're not into Prince and they like music and they know you like music, it's sort of like watching a robot like powered, like
there's tons of Prince songs that I love, and it was the first R-rated movie I ever saw.
There's tons of Prince songs I like.
Was Purple Rain. I snuck in when I was in fifth grade with my best friend, and we watched Purple Rain, and I saw boobies on the screen, and it was all
great. But that has nothing to do, I mean, with his songs and with his...
Well, I mean, I do think that's a great record, despite the fact that Kevin had to...
Purple Rain is actually a pretty decent song.
I learned that record by Dunk Tank, like 200 times, and I was like, I just can't do it anymore. Like, by Oral Dunk Tank,
you were forced to listen to it.
Yeah, it was
not
great.
The best way to come into
I found is, like, that sort of set the table for, like, the way that I approach certain times. It's the reason I don't care for Outkast. Like, same situation.
Oh, man. Hey, y'all.
Yeah. Like, hate that song. Yeah. Hey, can't do it, man.
I'm actually with Kevin on this, too. I think that's a boring song.
Well, but,
no, dude. I am all about
anyway,
it.
We know that you're all about it. You said
it
the first time.
You know what song they were really, or what Andre 3000 was really into? He loved Big Mouth Strikes Again. And for some reason, like,
he did.
He was somewhat inspired by that. The only other thing I want to bring up about Prince that I haven't heard or read anywhere discussed this week is, what was that drum sound? Like, it was a very singular drum sound that he had.
It's lots of reverb, like crazy splashy reverb, like wet reverb.
I haven't heard anybody else do it, but it's live drums, right?
It's live drums, but it's like a in the 80s, they had like a gated reverb.
Yeah, so it's basically like having a pedal on your guitar, but for drums.
Right, yeah. But it's like, it almost sounds like water splashing on it, like an old, like, it's like...
It was on everything Prince did for about 10 years.
So yeah, one of the things that when you guys asked me last week about the record that I would pick, one of the things that I mentioned was that I've been really excited lately about some of the podcasts that we've done by virtue of the fact that there have been some really amazing stories that have been wrapped up in these. And it just got me to thinking, and I was like, one of the best and certainly oddest stories around a release that ended up being pretty interesting, in my opinion, was that of the New Jersey band The Wrens, who put out a record in 2003 called The Meadowlands. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. So
I fucking love this album.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'd be very surprised if you're going to say something.
I don't love it.
Really?
I think it's pretty good.
Okay. All right.
The only thing I can say at all derogatory about it is it doesn't have like a giant single, but that's not even really.
Actually, I think it does. I think it has two really great singles, and I think those are two of the best singles or songs on the record.
Weirdly, it has a Creed connection, but we'll get into that.
Well, yeah. One of the guys.
Yeah, we'll talk about that stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me personally, I have an issue with – I couldn't figure it out. Like, why don't – and again, we were talking about this last week at the end of the show. Like, my copy – I bought this, and then my copy of it got scraped up while I was on tour, so I had only listened to a couple of songs. And when I was listening to it, I was like, oh, yeah, that's why – right, because I don't really like these songs. As it gets,
so you scraped it up and lost it because you don't like the songs?
No. But that's why I never went back and tried to listen to it again.
Okay.
But I really don't like the first couple of songs. And I was like, why do I like this? There's a lot going on that I should like. I don't like, and I feel stupid and selfish for saying this, but I just don't like the timbre of the two singers' voices.
Well, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Sure. Like, there's nothing. I mean, if you can't get
but there's
past that,
but there's also, and you don't like the drum.
I don't like Tom Waits' voice.
The drums sound like somebody's playing into a wet piece of paper. So that's part of it. And I'm surprised you don't like that because you really don't like lo-fi stuff.
I don't think this is a lo-fi record.
No, the drums are.
Well, but part of the let's be honest, like part of the reason the drums are could be perceived as lo-fi. I don't think that that's necessarily an off-base description by virtue of the fact that it was like a lot of the drum tracks were laid down years in advance of that record, and then like on some like fucking voodoo crazy, they were like it takes the worst of like of two different types of recordings, and they were tracking things on four of these different. I have to go look up exactly what the machine was, but like a machine that's not particularly used anymore, that's more analog and digital. And
Are you talking about this album was recorded on an ADAT?
Yeah, that's what it was. So there were four of these we were running at the same time, as the story goes, and it was like they were constantly kind of breaking. But some of the drum tracks that they came up with and they listened back to, they really liked. And so, anyway, the point being is, yeah, Shane, you're probably right. Like some of those drum tracks were recorded live, may have been old recordings that also were recorded poorly, but kept because the band loved them.
What I think, like the things, I'm like, why don't I love this? Because some of the songs I love, and I realized that it's like a 14, 15 track album. If you made this album into a 9 track album, it would be one of the best albums of the last 15 years.
That's an interesting observation.
Like super cohesive. Like not all the songs sound like each other.
No, some of them sound like Blink 182, like toss ups.
Bullshit,
dude. Have
I
you
don't
listened,
agree with that either.
Have you Have you listened to any of Blink 182's post pop punk stuff? Have you ever listened to any of the?
Why would I do that?
He did. Like you played one of those songs like the slow. Of course not. But that's what his voice sounds like to me.
Like it sounds like we don't exactly see eye to eye. And that
I think
happens,
we for
like,
the most part do. It's just there are two singers, and I feel I gravitate toward one more than the other. However, the one that I'm less likely to gravitate toward
sings on one of my favorite songs on the record. So it's like, I just don't like that, like, nasal flat. It just gets my hackles.
Well, let's talk about something that I think is kind of interesting, which is the weird path that went into making this record happen at all. And there is shit
ton of...
Which
is an amazing story.
Like, it's a crazy story.
The early 90s or something?
Yeah, so basically the band had put out a record in 1994 and another in 1996, both of which were critically acclaimed. But at the same time, one of the things that they noticed was that they were not that into, like, they just really wanted to refine and refine and refine the songs that they were working on. So after Secaucus came out in 1996, the label that they were on got bought. They changed the name of the label. They changed the...
They were on Grass, I guess?
They were on Grass, which got bought. They changed, the guy who bought it changed the name, and then he decided that he wanted to sign different kinds of bands, and he signed Creed and he signed Evanescence, and he wasn't that into literate, so they were kind of stuck, and they found out that and then he tried to strong arm the band into signing a $1 million contract, which sounds like, you know, a pretty good deal, but I think they also understood that the upside to their output was worth more. And so they decided, like, in the middle of a tour, when they found out that you have to either sign this or else, that they decided as a band that they weren't going to sign it. And so then they had to basically scrape together, like, they literally, like, just through credit cards or whatever, managed to get home. And then they eventually started working on the new release. And
what year did this come out?
Well, this came out in 2003, and their previous record came out in 1996. So there was a 7-year hiatus.
But they recorded a lot of it before this. They scrapped a bunch. They recorded it. They tried songs. They scrapped it again. And then they actually recorded this album several years in its entirety before it actually got released.
But that's the thing about the Rancid in particular, though. Even though they might record something at one point, it's like, and this is like, they're notorious for this, is like they just noodle and refine and perfect and
perfect.
No,
but I'm saying this album was eventually recorded, like a lot of the songs were eventually recorded.
Sure, and part of, yeah, there were 30 tracks that were laid down, and then of those 30 tracks, you know, part of the progression of this record is that they had a series of conversations with an A&R guy at Interscope who was interested in signing them, and then said that, you know, he didn't hear a hit. And so they basically put together an early version, almost like a power pop version of This Boy Is Exhausted, which basically is just kind of a middle finger to the record label. And I guess the guy listened to the lyrics, and then that didn't work out either.
He was like, no.
Yeah. So anyway, maybe we should play something. Well, let's do a little bit of This Boy Is Exhausted since that's the one we just mentioned.
Tattoo work, spitting rocks and cutting diamonds. 100 days, oh, with no pay, not anymore. Cause I'm cut, I can't type, I can't tempt. I'm way past college.
Say that, like, this record is stylistically all over the map, but like there are definitely things that to me sounds like 90s indie rock.
That sounds like like every single one of us in this room had friends with a really good friend and a pretty decent local indie rock band that had a really great song that they played.
That was the song?
That was that song.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, but there are songs that,
like, Fivehead was a really good band.
Great. Well, that's a good example of the Fivehead was a good band. They were a great band.
Yeah.
That was a great song. But is that song worthy of the praise that was lavished on?
Well, I wouldn't say that would be like the the ultimate song.
That's what I'm saying. There are reasons why this
record.
But
there's stuff on this that sounds like early REM of the Byrds, and then there's stuff that sounds. I mean, like I hear Spoon every now and then, a little bit.
No,
of
I think that's fair.
Like, I think you're giving them. I think you're giving them way too more of a free pass than they should get. It's a good record, and especially if you truncated it a little bit, it would
be. I love
it,
and I think it's actually.
Of course, you do.
Yes, I do, and I'm saying so. Also, if I were out like measuring carpets in northern Indiana and had to listen to a record like over and over again, like I'd probably love it even more. That's my Yola Tango.
It's just
reference.
Right in your wheelhouse. Like,
sure.
I don't say that's a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all. In any way, it's just.
Did I tell you guys how I actually had listened to this week? I think I started.
Did you start measuring carpets again?
Oh no, I have not. Wait,
Ryan,
no.
Ryan Flynn found a job measuring carpets.
No, let him. Let him. So he can listen to the album.
Yeah. I love you. Always have like various ways that you listen to these albums.
Well, no, mostly I just listen to them in my car. But like,
how did
lately,
you?
They're usually very specific and intricate. I would say.
Well, this one especially so. Like, I had to like rig up my phone with Scotch tape. Because my auxiliary cable wouldn't stick in the little jack.
Wait, how can you even make Scotch tape work for you?
I did. I mean, and it didn't always
nice
work. Sometimes it would pop out in the middle of it.
It's not very. It doesn't go around corners well.
It wasn't sticking in there, and I didn't know. I didn't. I was like, is the hole got wider? Like, what's happening? Basically was like every. I mean, I know, and I love this record, so I'm like. It was really frustrating, like, because I was just like having all these intricate Scotch tape. Situations going on like on my phone.
I love Scotch tape situation.
So, yes,
that's what I'm going to call my rap band.
That's your rap band.
It sounds like a spy movie.
It's hard to say.
It sounds like what should have been like Cary Grant's last movie.
We'll do a cover of Come Together.
The Scotch tape situation. Peter Sellers was in it.
Turns out, like I'm a complete fucking idiot. I finally today like went to a local like a wireless phone purveyor, what have you, and he like pulled out a little like pointed thing and he just cleaned out the lint from my phone jack from the auxiliary jack.
Oh, and that's what the problem was?
It was pocket lint.
And did he say well, did you try putting Scotch tape on it?
He did not say that, because it turns out you can just put the thing right back in if you take the lint out.
Well, let's talk about one thing that I think is like not necessarily the elephant in the room, but one thing that I think is really pertinent to understanding, like the way that this record came off to the public, is how it ended up getting big in the first place. And I've spent a lot of time
that big.
It did.
Well, it got certainly
within
momentarily.
Circles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
like pre Pitchfork or nascent Pitchfork, in journalism circles in 2003, this album was basically if you touched your leg, you spontaneously orgasmed kind of record.
I read some kind of like crazy fawning review from.
They're all
England.
Crazy fawning
no,
reviews.
No, I'm talking about like a live show from England, and that's
from the Guardian. Yeah, the Guardian. Yeah. Like they did a.
Well,
they
the other
did
thing
some
I was
kind of a,
as I listened to this, like if this was a local band, I would go see them like all the time. Sorry,
they're decent, but they sound like a local band. I mean, you just hit the nail on the head. They sound like a local band,
and you know, I mean, every band is local to somewhere. But
no, they sound like, good. It's good. It's just a B record. It's not like it does. I just don't understand where they. There are amazing songs on this record. Don't get me wrong, but it sounds for.
You should pick the next one.
Well, and let me circle back to the point. I mean, the point on this is like I have spent a lot of time, and I think with some pretty fair justification, beating Pitchfork with a ball peen hammer about the way that they kind of catch religion on some of these records. But with this one, specifically, the reason that this record blew up to whatever degree that it did. Was because of a fawning review from the editor-in-chief of Pitchfork Records, who had fallen in love with Secaucus when he was just getting Pitchfork up on Beer Legs.
That's a good band name too. Beer Legs. Beer Legs is a really good band name.
I think I've seen you on
Beer Legs before.
Yeah. I've seen you on Beer Legs.
You definitely have. It's a combination of me, too much whiskey, and Bambi.
Kevin, you're saying
that's Beer Legs.
Yeah. So Ryan Schreiber, the editor in chief of Pitchfork, fell in love with this record. And wrote what I can only, like, you know, to Shane's point, like, a fawning, gushing review that basically said 7 years is a long fucking time ago, and the band has always been really accessible via the internet, and even that persists today. And so anyway, he would just email these guys every so often and say, like, hey, I hear there's a follow-up. You guys, you know, making progress? How's it coming? And they would go, like, oh, it's coming soon, and it never did. And then they put out word that the record was done, which doesn't necessarily mean that it's coming out, but it was. And then they, when you really knew that they were serious, they threw a party and burned the master tapes.
Pardon?
What?
They destroyed the masters.
But apparently they did that, but they had them backed up.
Okay, well, that makes more sense, but that's not the way they spun the story out.
I know, but if you go on the Wikipedia page,
that's
like
a publicity stunt.
Yeah, well, I still kind of like that's a golf clap.
Oh, it's bigger than a golf clap. Yeah. I'm sure it was fun as fuck to be there in the middle of the moment. I like the band. There are. In fact, would you be okay if I pick the next song? This song,
as long as you let me say one last thing about this review, and then I want
to say whatever you want.
Okay, goddamn.
It's your goddamn fucking record.
That's what I'm talking about. The big point that he made in this review was that Secaucus is really like a sunny, like 90s, like the 90s alt indie band record. And this was not that, and it took him a little while to wrap his head around that, and then once he did and the reviews started coming in, it's about all these guys sort of being, you know, elder statesmen on the rock side and dealing with stuff that's a little heavier. So lyrically, and I want to talk to you about this sometime, Shane, like lyrically some of the things are darker, but not all the songs are. So that's all. Shane, what you were going to say, you want to pick a song?
Oh, yeah. No, I love when you say that. When we – it's always interesting to me when the three of us pretty much like collectively a record, but one of us doesn't like it quite as much as the other two.
Right.
So to listen to the other two, try to pull you in. Yeah. There are a few things about this record that I will say, and I did like it the longer it went on and on. There are a few songs I've listened to over the years since this album first came out, and one of them is 13 Grand. It's a piano driven song. Like I said before, there are two major male singers in this band, and as far as I can tell, otherwise the one guy is just singing in a really annoying Blink-182 way.
Charles Bissell and Kevin Whalen.
So 13 Grand, I think, is a brilliant song, start to finish. A lot of these songs also do a lot of superfluous soft stuff, yeah. You know. And
I kept thinking I was getting a phone call, and sometimes the song would just cut off in the middle, and I'm like, oh, I must be getting a phone call. Nope, they're just
they've just stopped for a little while.
Let's listen to 13 Grand. All right. That song is beautiful.
I love it.
It's stunning.
It's fantastic.
It's stunning. But one of the things about that song
I wish you wrote it.
I wish I wrote a lot of songs. Yeah. I mean, like.
But that's good, though. Like, you never, like, you should. Anyway, David Bowie was still listening to new stuff, like, right up until the end. And so you got to. Creativity. Music is collaborative.
Yeah. No, that song in particular is one of the. When I say I wish this album, instead of being like. And a lot of the things that, like, all of the songs are like 3.5 minutes plus, except for maybe the first song on the album. they're good. Like, there's not a bad song that I can think
of. That song reminds me of the better parts of Apples and Stereo. A little bit.
Ooh. Okay.
I think you know why? It's because it reminds you of one specific Apples and Stereo song that I can think of right. I can't think of the name of right now, but yeah,
thank
I know.
You.
I'm just helping you. Well, he was very specific.
I can't think of it either, but yeah, you're probably right. It's the one that has the Mondrian looking.
Yeah.
Kevin, you had that record.
Yeah. No, that record's terrific. But anyway, yeah. But I could see like there are certainly. Similarities to some of the Elephant Six outfit, which in
with like, that song,
like well, and beyond that, like the band has been quoted as saying that like they're inspired by the White Album. They wanted to do something, and they want to do something grandiose,
but they don't necessarily sound derivative of anybody. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll give you that. I just feel like a lot of it. And I thought about this like the first couple of times I listened, because I kept listening to it over and over again, and I was like, you know, I told you guys a story earlier today about how I can't remember if my copy got stolen or destroyed, but I listened to it a little bit when I was on tour, and I always remember getting stuck at that song "Happy," the second track, and like liking it, but then I couldn't put my finger on, and still can't, on what I don't love about this band. The only thing that I can think of, for the most part, is I really, really, really don't like the sound of one of the singer's voices.
Well, that's a hard thing to get over. The timbre of somebody's voice. If you just, I'm never gonna like Tom Waits. I think he's a good songwriter.
Same thing here. I think that those songs are like are really good. In fact, the third song on this record, the one "She Sends Kisses," is maybe the best song, if not the second best song, and it's got that guy's voice on it. Where he's got that kind of pop punky voice. But the song is so good, I just don't care. It's so good.
I think that's indicative of not just necessarily like a lot of really interesting music in general, but certainly some of the stuff that's on this record, which is that it makes you sort of reassess. Like, you think you sort of have your head around it, and you give it a second listen or a third listen or whatever, and it starts to maybe turn into something a little bit more complex. And some of that, I think, we haven't really talked a lot about the lyrical content. I think we ought to do that on the other side. But yeah, they're not just straightforward, necessarily super simple approaches to whatever they're talking about.
But they're long on melody, like all the way through. And I appreciate that. But for now, let's get into the intermission.
A
few minutes with. We're going to be listening to Sloan this week. We talked about actually maybe doing a Sloan record, and then I listened to it, and I was like, oh, this is going to be just like New Pornographers.
I was going to say, like, you texted me, and you're like, I think it's going to sound too much like New Pornographers. Should we do Hank Williams Jr., I Saw Light, which there was no I Saw Light record, and you guys are going to see this in a couple of weeks, but I feel like I had one of the most fun shows
last week when we did that.
That was a blast, and it was a good call. But the reason I really wanted to cover that Sloan record is because of this particular song, which is Deeper Than Beauty, and it's genius.
Are you saying that that's the...
Go, hey, that girl's only wanna... Oh, wait, sorry, that's...
No, it doesn't go like that.
Guided by Voices.
It goes like this. yes, that was Sloan, Deeper Than Beauty from the record Twice Removed. And I love it so much.
No, that's a great track. It's a great track.
And you know who introduced me to that is our friend Allison Headley.
Oh, that's interesting.
Who was my once and former girlfriend.
There you go. And I feel like there's a lot of sort of Allison is very creative and also like probably a bit of an admitted nerd, and there are a lot of nerds that love Sloan. Like it's a thing.
Well, and like a lot of that song is about
it's true.
About like how he likes her better when she doesn't have her glasses on.
Oh yeah.
That's stupid.
Yeah. You want to know she made me a mix. She made me a mix CD. You know what the name of it was called? Songs
Carl.
into which you could insert the phrase flatbed scanner. Because we once had a conversation about how cool the two-word phrase flatbed scanner was. But anyway.
Just sounds like a great like bluegrass name of a bluegrass. Flatbed scanner coming up next. Flatbed scanner.
I don't know. I just got like
27-minute banjo solo.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was the standout track on her like opus songs into which one could insert the phrase flatbed scanner. And no, that's Sloan. And like, it's just I've seen them once and they were a blast. Like, they're a great power pop band.
Yeah, no, I'm a sucker for stuff like that. I think that's cool.
Yeah. Shane?
Not a sucker for stuff like that.
Yeah. If you're wondering where the rain and the parade is.
Sorry.
here comes the schoolmaster.
I said this before and I say it again. Like,
which is why we ended up like taking a hard left from doing the entire record.
There's a lot of breadth, not a lot of depth in power pop and their melodies. Like,
I'll give you that.
But as a singular track and not like the band's entire output, like it's a fun it's a fun joint.
I think it's a blast.
It's definitely a channel changer for me.
Okay.
All right.
But I mean, there's shit that I like worse than it. I mean, that I don't like.
That I like worse.
That I hate
like
more
the
than
sunniest
this.
Sunniest insult I've ever
heard. I didn't hate it. I shouldn't say that. It's fine.
Oh, well. Thanks, buddy.
Sorry, man.
I mean, I didn't make the song.
I know.
It's just the fiber of my being.
I wasn't like, why would you? Why? I mean, in no way would I have tried to be like, hey, Ryan, you fucked up there, bud. Hey, take that shit back.
Shouldn't you have done that during the Hank Williams episode if we're going to talk like that?
No, that was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
I'm from Texas, man. I can talk like that whenever I want.
Goddamn right.
You know what? Skyler doesn't like it when I talk like that, but it can come back at any point. Like, hey, what are y'all doing?
Man, it's all kinds of fun.
It can get here as quick as I want.
Here and go to McDonald's.
And we won't sidebar on this for too long, but suffice. But producer Mark, true or false, there was a time when you moved back from the UK that when you got a certain amount of drunk that you would affect a British accent. Is that true?
Yeah, I think it probably will happen.
Oh, yeah. It's true. It's totally true.
Hey, well,
I also know about how like when you got so drunk that you thought you were speaking Spanish, but instead you were speaking English with a really bad Spanish accent.
Yeah, no, I did that. I did that to a waiter, and he smiled at me in a way that I'm still not sure whether he thought it was really funny or he wanted to kill me, and it was probably both.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's fair enough to say both. When Skylar gets drunk, when she gets really drunk, she affects a like a hardcore Midwestern, like Wisconsinian, like as though she were from Minnesota, Wisconsin. She's like, oh yeah. That's because her brain tries to make her not, because when she was in college, she would affect
trying
like
to deprogram herself from
no.
Accent?
When she was in college, she would have this really strong Texas accent, and people would make fun of her for it. And so, like, now she's tried to go to the other side. So when she gets drunk, she's like, oh, yeah. Oh, I had one beer. Like this Norwegian. Well,
she just turned Irish all of a sudden.
I don't know what it is. I can't do the accent that she does. Anyway, Mark, make this go away.
There's also so we're back to talking about the Wrens, seminal recording, the Meadowlands that came out in 2003. There have been a number of interesting and using Shane's parlance, fawning articles about this album. That's certainly true, but one that I think was particularly interesting and that's worth worth like a full read if you get a chance is go look up the write up history of this record that was done. There's an article that was written on the that came out on the 10th anniversary of the release of this record in 2013 that was done in Stereogum. That
oh, I saw part of this.
Yeah, kind
of. I thought it was reasonable.
I thought so too. Like, kind of tells the blow by blow. And one of the things I thought was really like it was really interesting for me, and like just to like sort of get your head around like all the things that were just fucking weird about the way that this whole record came, like even came to be a thing. And then one of the things that was really weird about that that article, and I thought also kind of interesting too, was that I guess they're friends with Will Sheff from Acquaville River,
mm-hmm.
and now band. Yeah, and now band. Now managed by and have been managed for some time by I guess the guy that manages Acquaville River and Spoon. And so there is definitely like kind of an Austin connection to.
Last I knew, Spoon's manager also was Wilco's manager. I don't know if that's still the case. Yeah, yeah, that's inside baseball that nobody cares
yeah,
about.
Yeah, but at the very least, like I do think it's like it kind of it informs a little bit of sort of the way that they sometimes that they go to market, which can be like given the story with the way that this record came to be a public thing, I think is kind of fun. Anyway, yeah, there were a lot of things that I thought were really interesting about this kind of living history blow by blow of the way that the whole thing came to be, not the least of which.
Can I just say that I just brought up Wrens.com?
Yeah.
And the tagline on it is keeping folks waiting since 1989.
No, they're really like upfront about the fact that they like just
they just don't put out shit.
No, and they're often. Like and they're like, hey, it's about to happen, and it just like most of the time it just doesn't. Yeah. So yeah. But they're also like they don't it's not like they're super reclusive either. Like they're active on Twitter and active on Facebook and they talk to the fans all the time. And so anyway, I just think in some ways these guys are kind of like iconoclasts.
Yeah, man. Like I as long as I was listening to it, I was like, I don't know why these guys aren't more famous. Like I'd heard of them, but like nobody's ever played this around me. I fucking love it. I mean, obviously I love it. I've mentioned that before. But like I don't know why they aren't more well known, other than like they were on a label that eventually signed Creed.
Well, they're not more well known. It's because this album came out in 2003, not 2013. Like now the music industry is geared so totally differently than it was then. I mean, right now they would be more well known. Like, you know, they probably sold as many albums as the last Beach House record did over the course of the last 13 years. But because the industry was geared so differently, where now it's like, you can hear about a lot more bands. You can a lot more bands that come up through the breakthrough, the muck and the mire, or whatever.
The ebb and the flow of the interwebs.
Asshole. No, that stuff is a lot more. It's easier to hear about whether or not you've heard them or not. It's easier to hear about litany of other bands than it was like in 2003.
Right.
I mean, that's probably like, in my opinion, that's partially the reason. Like, if you can like find a band, like a band, get on their Instagram, or find a band, like a band, get on their, you know, you could just hear about them a lot
find
more
a band,
now.
Like a band, get on their Instagram.
can somebody find me? This is what I need you to do now. Find me a black comb and a piece of wax paper. Find a band.
That's like the longest bumper sticker ever.
Just turn can you turn the machine off, like Mark, and get me a comb and wax paper? Let's do it.
Kevin, yeah. Do you have another quote? Or
okay, well, if you're not going to, then thanks.
One of the, you know, at the risk of sharing a little bit of the inside baseball stuff, which I think is probably, frankly, appropriate given what's going on here, they were signed to Absolutely Kosher Records. And part of the reason they signed with Absolutely Kosher Records was that, like,
they're super Jewish?
No. They was like baseball. That was the only, like, that the guy that runs that.
Thanks,
yes.
Ryan.
Yes.
I'm like, sure you should write their new Wikipedia page.
Right, exactly. good God. Anyway.
Extra kosher, super Jewish.
Yeah. Anyway. The gist of that was that, like, they had fallen off the radar. And so so the guy who runs that label was the only one who was paying attention. And so anyway, they ended up signing with a label that was smaller than they would have otherwise, and they put out a big record.
Interscope.
And then they right. That was not
Maverick Records circa 1997.
And then they put out a record that ended up blowing up, and that label had a hard time handling the demand. Shane, what was the track that you liked? Why don't we?
Hopeless was his favorite.
Hopeless, I think, is my favorite.
Yeah, let's go ahead and go. Let's go with Hopeless. What you want me? One of the things that we have kind of teased but we haven't ever really actually talked about is the fact that like a lot of these songs have to do with like the fact that these guys are, you know, at the time that this record came out, between 33 and 40, they were like
having kids and like working jobs.
Well, some of them had been through divorces and like, yeah, they had day jobs and shit. And so they're singing about, in some cases, like just like failure and the realization of your own mortality and some of the things that like people who get into middle age actually start thinking about, that people who write sunny albums like Secaucus don't ever get around to. They're the lyrics to Hopeless. So, I mean, you can kind of unpack that yourself. I mean, Shane is usually our lyrics guy.
Well, the thing about this, and this is part of the reason why I love this song so much, is it's got one of my favorite opening lines ever. Oh no, comma, not this time too. I mean, that's just... You put yourself right in that story. Oh, no, not this time, too.
Well, and part of the reason that you do is that the story sort of starts in the middle, right? Like, it's not like once upon a time. It's
yeah,
like,
and then it's
here
like,
we are right in the shit from the very beginning.
Well, and then after, yeah. So, I mean, it goes to a place.
Well, and this record, like it doesn't. It plays around with, like, where things are supposed to start and stop. Because, like I said earlier, like, it's... There were many times that I thought, like, I'm just getting a phone call. Nope, the song just ended or just started, like, again, like, jarringly, which I enjoy.
I mean, it's good.
Is there a way to qualify good, like, with a...
It's not...
It's like a reverse.
It was like, great.
Count your blessings, because earlier he said it was just fine.
Yeah, so. No, it's moved up a notch.
No. I said that song was just
with
fine.
With italics, but they go the backwards
way. I said that the album was pretty good, and then I said it was a B, and then... No, I was talking about that one particular song.
Good had, like,
was,
kind of a fading question mark there, which is like, yeah. I mean, it's fair. Like, I mean,
well,
sure,
it
like,
is, but I think that, again, I... Like, for me personally, if you cut the album by half, it would be brilliant. Well,
too
but
bad they didn't have you there to sequence it.
So, anyway, yeah, but the chorus says that, you know, anyway, like, part of the chorus says, go thank yourself for nothing. It's really all you're good for. Every year you wasted and every half-ass offer. So it's like, I kind of feel like there's a lot of this record that plays a little bit like a failed romance, but really they're pretty... They're long-term pissed at record labels. Like, I think that's...
And why wouldn't they be?
Right, well, sure, yeah. But anyway.
Like, these guys have been through, like, as good as they are, like, and as bad as so many other bands are that have been more successful, I'd be pissed.
Well, and...
They've been just shy of the brass ring for a long time.
Yeah, anyway.
That's not the only reason
you
to be pissed
about. You think
we have time
to listen to one more?
Yeah, let's do one more so we can get on to the last bit. And, you know, I will say that... One of the challenges for this record, at least for me, was that like there are a few tracks that I think would be interesting and worth sharing, but you can't do all of them. Here's my Steve Harvey attempt at like first runner-upping this thing. So we are not gonna play Happy, which is a song I actually really like, but it's a lot of build up for a really great like sort of exhilarating payoff at the end. We won't play that. But let's do Everyone Chooses Sides. I think that's another one that like is kind of a standout track on this record.
I'll bet everyone will choose sides.
That seems to be what we're doing tonight. $13,000. There's a lot of talk about $13,000
because it's a good goddamn song.
Well,
tell you what,
and I also think that
I mean, I want $13,000.
I mean, sure. I mean, given the choice between $13,000 and not having $13,000, I guess you'd take the $13,000. But if you're a band that thinks you might get $13,000, and you've got
you've got a song called $13,000.
I got in the middle of that and I was like, I don't know, I think I'm trapped, I can't get out of here. So anyway, point being is like they talk about that number a lot.
They do, so there's like, gotta be something involved in that.
The impression that I get, it's not written
like somebody's mom died and
It's not, I don't think it's written about exclusively, but the impression that I get
they do like, reference it on two songs. One song being named $13,000.
Yeah. Anyway, the impression that I get is like there's a lot of sort of talk about how expensive it is to put a record out, and some of the things that they've had to go through.
It's expensive to just try to make it in the music business. Like, there's a reason I don't do that shit anymore. Because
it's complicated.
Oh, what? Like play all the guitars and pianos?
I never did any of that stuff.
Oh,
I just tried to.
Maybe that's why I was so hard on
administrative. I was gonna say.
I raise my hand and say I only did administrative stuff and was trying to make a living.
Administrative stuff is incredibly important.
Well, so let's.
It is. Let me, I don't mean that disparagingly. You're right.
I tried
it
really hard.
I was busting your balls, but
I failed.
You did a good job at what you, for me. You did
well.
Well, thank you.
Let's circling back to the Wrens here for a moment. The Ben Dickey was the guy that has worked with Spoon and Acreville River and
was from Austin
and the overall maker.
Think he still is, but yeah,
yeah. Anyway, but he was in this, Stereo Gum piece that ran in 2013, and he said something that I think is like, as we encapsulate this record, is kind of worth sharing. He said, I feel like they've sort of done their own thing and now it's almost retro, which is kind of weird to say, that sort of super hooky, super melodic, super loud rock music. There aren't like three or four bands that are flying that flag right now. I almost feel like they've always been a band about melody and the balance between melody and noise in that pop way. It's a personal taste thing, but I feel like that sort of never goes out of style.
I felt like every single song on this record had a good melody in it. Now, there wasn't like a standout like giant single to me, but like I loved, not love, but like I genuinely liked every song on this record.
Anyway, one thing that we haven't talked about, and I won't dive down the rabbit hole on this, but like one thing that we haven't talked about is like my recollection of this record when it came out is like part of the legend was it was like there are these three like sort of three or four older guys who like live in a house in Jersey together and they make records there.
Yeah, it's like full house except for like
no Bob Saget. Yeah, but yeah. Exactly. Anyway, and as I dug deeper into it, like
maybe
some of that is true.
Laugh track, Shane would have liked it better.
Well, I don't know.
You know, I love laugh tracks.
I know you do.
Anyway, I will say that they first said that they had completed the new record in 2014. Clearly, that nothing came out then, and there have now been three separate announcements that said that they have finished the follow-up release. As of like a month ago on Twitter, they said to a fan directly that they think that it's going to come out in late fall. We'll see, but at the very least, like these guys, it won't be for lack of time.
True to their tagline, keeping folks waiting since 1989.
Is now a good time for me to mention that I didn't like this album?
Oh, did you not?
Are you here, Mark?
Yeah. No, I didn't actually enjoy it.
It's a snoozer.
We've split the table.
If this album were 10 songs long, it would be a great album. There's a lot to wade through here.
See, I can't even say that for me.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't.
What was your
nothing
beef?
Really rang true.
Did you get what I was saying about the Blink 182 style voice?
I could kind
of
hear it.
I agreed with a lot of what you said.
Have you been letting me roast?
I can't go as far
for an hour.
I've
been hanging you out to dry.
Yeah, why have you not like jumped in here and helped me?
Because it's kind of been fun. Why don't we
fuck off, Mark? What are we doing next? Oh, we're listening. Okay, car seat headrest. Yeah, so we're gonna do current affair, car seat headrest. See you in a second.
Biting my clothes to keep from screaming. Taking pills to keep from dreaming. I want to break something important. I want to kick my dad in the shin. I was referring to the present and past tense. It was the only way that I could survive it. I want to close my head in the car door. I want to sing this song like I'm dying.
Well, that's a waste of a good carry-all right there, guys.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, just put the guy in. I guess he wasn't quite being put in there and burned as he floated down the river, but there was some guy like sitting on the riverbank like, hey, what the fuck is going on? All these four indie rock guys putting a guy in a...
Yeah, how many indie rockers does it take to destroy an abandoned house?
Well,
do you have a punchline for that?
I don't think you need a punchline for that. The punchline's implicit in the joke.
Well, and you know the old.
You've seen that video.
You know the old saying is like, you find out who your friends are when they put you in a carry-on and start hitting at you with a pickaxe.
That's the old axiom, the old nuggets of gold.
Mm-hmm. Part of the reason why I wanted to play that song, Ryan, specifically was because I feel like that music is somewhat similar to what we listen to in certain ways.
Okay, here's the thing where we're going to switch positions. I liked that video and that song about as much as you liked the record we just listened to. I like it.
Like a bee?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, totally but I'm not, going to go home and jam it out.
And this is why I said before, in the interim, I think, this isn't an album band, but I was almost positive that you were going to flip it the way that I, in which you, my evil.
Oh, you're twiddling
my mustache. I was almost positive because I've gotten to the point where, and you've gotten to the point where you can almost tell me, I knew you weren't going to like that. And I can almost tell you, I knew you weren't going to like that. I knew what you were going to like about it and not like. I wanted that song to be the song because it sounds so much like, but it's not. It doesn't have the heartfelt stuff. There's an irony in that album we just listened to.
That song was pretty good, but it didn't grab me in the way that the record we just listened to grabbed.
Right,
and in fairness,
I feel the exact opposite.
And in fairness, I think it's probably fair to say, Shane, you probably had a chance to roll around in that song a little bit, and Ryan and I have just heard it for the first time, so it's like. Yeah, just upon repeated listenings, I thought it was good too.
Right,
and
that's how I feel about about that album. Pretty good. I mean, pretty good is good, man. A B plus is a B plus.
You're on to the next grade. Qualifier that makes it sound like you don't like it.
What's the qualifier?
Pretty.
an enthusiastic shrug sometimes is okay. Like, you can, like,
enthusiastic shrug.
Like,
is that a thing that exists?
It can be. It clearly is tonight. So,
don't you think that, like, every,
I think I just hurt my shoulder.
It would be boring if every person on the face of the planet loved everything that we all listened to.
The show would be boring if we all agreed on everything.
Yeah, but at no point tonight or at no point do I feel like, I mean, other than when we listen to LCD Sound System, where I...
Oh, you're just wrong. You're just dead wrong.
Okay, but other than that, or when we all genuinely just tried to fucking...
You're talking about
hit
Meatloaf?
Mark in the head with, like, branches we found on the ground, like when he did Meatloaf. Yeah, I mean, other than those...
I can't remember. Mark, did you actually like that record?
No.
No.
He hated it.
Yeah.
Okay. No,
which, made it tolerable.
Mark just believes in Mark just believes in making entrance. And so
he believes in making magic.
It was my first album, and I honestly thought that the concept of the show was, we don't, but somebody likes it.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah, no, true. You were right.
That is true. Somebody, lots of people like that. I don't.
I got a good one next. Oh shit! I got to do a one I like next time. So, well, after that, I have a good one.
Okay. Well, who is Shane? Next? So yeah. So Shane, are you next? Is it?
I am next.
Shane okay. And next. So let's re-canvas because we talked a little bit at the end of last.
We're doing
show.
Our new cycle.
So
we like it.
We're gonna do a month here. And Mark, are you gonna be involved in this month?
Or I like
sure.
it.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. What would be great for me? And we can talk about this, and you can edit it out. We're going to do a month of We Like It.
Great.
Culminating on the Memorial Day mixtape show.
Ah, love it.
So, you know, we'll be able to do that. And so next week, I'm going to do the Smiths. Like, I keep...
Oh,
the
first record.
And honestly...
Well, I want to do Louder Than Moms, and I keep not... Like, there are so many records...
Louder Than Moms is, like, if I'm not mistaken, is that an American release that, like, is, like, a collection of singles?
It's a collection of singles, yeah.
Yeah. Which I'm fine with, but...
It isn't... Yeah, the reason I don't want to pick Louder Than Moms, I think, is the best Smiths record, but it's a long, long record. We'll do the Smiths.
I
the Smiths.
Smiths all day long.
Me too.
By the way, one thing that we used to talk about a lot, we haven't talked about very much lately, is that if you listen to the show and you like what you're hearing, and you want to send us some suggestions about things that you'd like us to cover, or just things that you're interested in. By the way, drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. Other than that, this has been a fun show. Thanks, you guys, for Somebody Likes It. I'm Kevin.
I'm Ryan.
Shane.
And Mark.
Somebody Likes It.